Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loria. We're going to open up the phone lines in a few minutes, but on the first part of today's program, we're going to talk about whether or not the U.S. is undergoing a slow-motion coup. We'll speak with a former CIA analyst in just a moment. First, three listener comments about yesterday's program. Yesterday, we talked about the outcome of the election, and we also asked some listeners to fact-check the first commenter of yesterday's program. And after the program, here's what three listeners had to say.
Hey, this is Michelle in Tampa. I was just wanting to comment on some of the claims that Trump may run for president again in 2024. I think it'd be kind of hard to do that from prison, so there you go.
That was a great show today on the origins of fascism. When you asked the professor about why strongmen have an appeal to people, I think she gave you a bit of a politically correct answer. What she said was, what I heard her say was that it has to do with societal change and people get afraid when minorities are coming to power. But I beg to differ, and I will offer as why did Hitler appeal to the Germans? Well, Germany was in economic chaos. It didn't have to do with minorities in the country so much as it did with total economic chaos. People there working at a factory would have to work 2 hours, then collect their pay and go pay it, because if they waited till the end of the day, the money would, due to inflation, would be worth half as much. So they had hyperinflation like, you know, Americans have never, ever seen. And the economy was in a shambles. There was also all the effects of the Treaty of Versailles, which was horribly unfair to the Germans, and everybody, all historians admit. And so they're all, Germany's industrial infrastructure had been destroyed. And so someone like Hitler comes by and he's offering a radical solution. Hey, people want radical change. So that, I think, explains the rise of Hitler much more than, say, the presence of, you know, dark people or minorities.
Hi, this is Jeff from New Tampa. Yeah, I know somebody had made mention of the idea that Trump had been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize, and Rob asked to do some fact-checking. So basically I found out that Snopes says in September 2020, two Scandinavian politicians announced that they would nominate Trump for the 2021 Nobel Peace Prize. And there was also a rumor that he was nominated in 2016, but that is not true. And the names of the nominees are not revealed until 50 years after, so it is not known for certain whether or not he was nominated.
Well, those comments were all about yesterday's program, in which we talked with Ruth Ben-Ghiat, the historian, about her new book about strongmen. That was part of the topic yesterday. Well, thanks for tuning into Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loria, and this is 88.5 FM. Reading this article from Alternet, it says, the willingness of some on the far right to take violent action in order to defeat Trump's political opponents has been made clear in recent weeks. The FBI last month arrested more than a dozen people in connection with a plot to kidnap Michigan's governor, Gretchen Whitmer, a Democrat, over her government's coronavirus safety protocols, which have come under fire from President Trump. And last weekend, as Americans across the country celebrated Trump's defeat in the election by President-elect Joe Biden, armed supporters of the president attended counter-protests, decrying so-called illegal voting and claiming that the election had been stolen. And this week, actor and conservative activist John Voight posted a video on social media, which was retweeted more than 43,000 times, accusing leftists of corruption and calling on fellow Trump supporters to prepare for our greatest fight since the Civil War. And Yale University history professor Timothy Snyder warned against laughing off what he called a clear attempt at a coup. He said, underestimating Donald Trump is a mistake that people should not go on making. Snyder was writing in the Boston Globe on Wednesday, laughing at him will not make him go away. If it did, he would have vanished decades ago. That's a Yale University history professor, Timothy Snyder. Well, what's the condition of the country right now as President Trump resists acknowledging that Joe Biden will become the new president on January 1st? And what's with all the replacements at top positions in the administration? Well, earlier today, I spoke with Mel Goodman, who's a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy. He's also a former CIA analyst. He's written several books. And Goodman wrote in Counterpunch this week that we are revisiting 7 days in May, which is a great movie about an attempted right-wing coup in the U.S. in the early 1960s. Here's my interview with Mel Goodman. Mel Goodman, welcome to WMNF. Thank you for coming on the program.
Thank you, Rob. Good to be with you again. You always call me when there's bad news to talk about.
Well, maybe one of these days we'll get some good news. You served 24 years as an intelligence analyst at the Central Intelligence Agency. If you were looking at another country going through what we're going through right now here in the U.S., how would you analyze it?
Well, that's a great question. If I were looking at a country, and I don't have to identify the country, this would be a general matter, and if you saw a president just lose an election and contest the results of the election and refer to fraudulent votes and then start to purge the national security system, you remove the Secretary of Defense, you remove three top aides to the Secretary of Defense, including the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Policy, the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence, and then your chief of staff, and you bring in extremely weak individuals, clear loyalists to the president, people who we would call sycophants, sort of the lowest of the low. Then you look at the Department of Homeland Security, and you go after the deputy of the Cyber and Infrastructure Security Agency. This was the deputy, in this case, who said the election was quite legal, and probably the fairest election we've ever held in this country with no possible chance of contamination. And he's fired, along with the Assistant Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security for International Relations. And then you have a Secretary of State of that country who says there will clearly be a transition to the president who just lost the election. And then when you look elsewhere in the government, you have the Director of National Intelligence in this particular country no longer willing to exchange or provide information, intelligence information, to the obvious winner of the election, which is customary in American elections, and actually for the last 20 years has been considered mandatory and essential for national security. So when you go on and on in this fashion, not allowing the new president to gain congressionally approved funding for the transition, to set up offices, to pay personnel, this is a country that has, say, a budget of $10 million set aside for that, and this political appointee from basically the government agency that deals with logistics and government property says, no, I'm not sharing this. Well, I would write up an intelligence piece. It would go to the policy community, and presumably it would go to the president himself. And the warning I would put on there that this looks like a constitutional coup that's taking place before our eyes. And I would say we don't know, or the CIA cannot say that the president would be successful in this direction. We don't know if his ultimate instructions will be carried out, if he wants to use uniformed military, but this is clearly what he's thinking. In terms of the people he's removing and the people he's putting in place, in terms of the most sensitive positions for national security.
If he is putting sycophants in these sensitive positions, and many of them, as you point out, don't really have much experience, will those agencies or would those services underneath these people, would they comply with the president's orders, or would there be any resistance among the ranks of people who've been there for a while and maybe understand and respect the Constitution?
Well, that's the ultimate test and the ultimate question. And my feeling has always been is people, for the most part, will go along, sad to say, that the idea of a whistleblower is rare, the idea of a challenger is rare. And just to give a further example that I didn't cite, look at what has just happened to the National Security Agency. The National Security Agency has a legal office of over 100 lawyers headed by a general counsel. Well, the general counsel was just removed. In his place was a very junior individual who was on the National Security Council who was put in charge. Now the question is, will those lawyers follow the lead? And we have an example really at the highest levels with Attorney General Barr, who I consider the enabler in chief. Now he's starting to get some pushback. There's been some key resignations, particularly from the election crimes division, because Barr is breaking with tradition and wants to examine the possibility of fraudulent voting around the time of an election, which the Department of Justice, by tradition, never does. Now, this particular lawyer protested and resigned his position, but leaving in place various lawyers who can carry out the instructions of the Attorney General. So I don't think we can count on I wouldn't count on institutions. You're counting really on courageous individuals. Actually, contrarians almost are going to be willing to stand up to the president. And it raises the question in terms of the military, because if there were actually a coup, say, in the country we're talking about, the military would be responsible for putting troops on the ground. And we can never be sure what the military will do. And I think of the coup that took place, coup attempt in Turkey several years ago. You had military units that were supportive of the coup attempt and military units were protesting, that stood down. And you had that against, Mikhail Gorbachev in 1991 in the summer before he was overthrown by Yeltsin in December. There was an attempt by a group to overthrow Gorbachev, and the military wouldn't have any part of it, the professional military. So you really don't know. It's sort of an intelligence call. But clearly in terms of coup planning and preparing by putting all of the right people, the loyalists, in position, and that's what these people are. They're superficially resumed here. They have very little experience, but they are loyal to the President of the United States, which is exactly what this particular president wants. So I find it very worrisome. And actually, the explanations that have been given for what Trump in this case is doing are totally unsatisfactory, that he's just helping. In the New York Times, I saw an article where it may have been Maggie Haberman, of all people, said president is just trying to give these people an enhanced resume so when they start looking for a job. Trump isn't concerned with the jobs these people will be getting after he leaves office. In fact, his chief of personnel has said he will fire anybody who's shopping a resume. So that's nonsense. And if it was just revenge, I can see why he would go after the Secretary of Defense, Esper, who issued a strong statement after taking part in that June 1st blasphemous display at Lafayette Square in front of the St. John's Episcopal Church. So you get rid of Esper because Esper has been taking down Confederate flags at Army bases and working with the Congress to change the names on various Army bases in the South named after Confederate generals. But why go after the four senior people under Esper and bring in people like Colonel Doug McGregor, who I know, a retired colonel who was named to be ambassador to Germany this past summer, but Democrats and Republicans moved against it because of McGregor's misogynistic and racist remarks that he's been making on a regular basis on podcasts and various radio interviews. So the whole thing, I think it's very serious. And I guess I would add to it that in this case, not the fictional country we're talking about, but our actual country, you're talking about a president who seems to be a pathological narcissist who right now I think is blaming the country for letting him down and particularly blaming the people around him for his failure. He will never accept the idea that he's lost this election. He will never concede. But he will blame all those people who failed him, whether it was the entire nation that failed him in terms of the voting turnout, or the people in his immediate environment, his senior officials like his Secretary of Defense or the Assistant Secretary of Homeland Security for Cybersecurity, who guaranteed the fairness of the election, which is counter to everything that Donald Trump is saying. So actually, the more I talk about this, the more I think about it, the more serious it becomes in my own mind.
We're talking with former CIA analyst Mel Goodman. He's a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy. He's also a professor of government at Johns Hopkins University. He's the author of several books, including Failure of Intelligence. And this is WMNF in Tampa. Mel, your piece, which is on Counterpunch, the website today, is called Revisiting 7 Days in May. And in that famous movie, which is one of the great movies of all times, it's about the early 1960s, it's the Cold War, and there are generals that want to overthrow the president because they think the president's too liberal on issues of nuclear weapons. And the movie opens with protesters in front of the White House, both anti-nuclear weapons protesters and pro-nuclear weapons protesters, and they start fighting right there in front of the White House. Tomorrow in Washington, D.C., the Oath Keepers are planning to hold a rally, and there are groups opposed to fascism and right-wing extremism that are going to be there to challenge the Oath Keepers. The Oath Keepers will be protesting in favor of President Trump. I mean, it's almost like it's out of a movie.
Yeah, I'm worried about this event, but I think the media has overdone the possibilities for violence around this election. I don't think, for one thing, Trump has that kind of support. I think there's been tremendous exaggeration, particularly on the left, in terms of radical activities. And when you look at the activities on the right, which Department of Homeland Security has been calling attention to on a regular basis, these are small groups that lack an organizational structure. So there's always the chance for some episodic event, some random event. But I think Washington, in terms of just security in Washington and the police department in Washington, can take care of this kind of event. But it's dangerous what Trump is trying to do in getting people to rally and encouraging groups like the Proud Boys to stand down and stand by. I mean, he's gone way beyond hints at what these groups should do. He is essentially giving groups on the far right real credibility and real endorsement of their kinds of activities. It's dangerous.
One last question, and that is that you use an analysis that deals with probabilities to kind of give us a probable outcome of what we're seeing right now. This analysis is called
Bayesian analysis.
Bayesian analysis.
We used it at the CIA, and it's very interesting. In other words, you would argue, and we used it at the CIA for, say, the split between the Soviet Union and China in the 1960s, when no one was predicting a split. But you sit down around a table and you say, well, if there were to be a split, what events would you see? So you talk about maybe propaganda heating up, or maybe some tension on the borders, or high-level statements from officials in Beijing or Moscow. And the more you see these events take place, you would go, say, from a 5% chance of a split to a 10 or 15% chance of a split. So if I were to apply Bayesian analysis to whether there's going to be a coup in the United States, every time I see one of these incredible personnel changes, or the activities of Attorney General Barr or Secretary of State Pompeo, I think my chances in terms of the odds I would place would lead to greater possibility that this event will indeed take place. It's different from predicting it will, but saying that the chances have changed. You know, it'd be like watching the tote board at a racetrack and watching the odds change as the money comes in. Well, as the evidence comes in, again, you have to change the odds of these things taking place. And it's something we don't want to think about. It's really the unthinkable. And remember, those are the areas where you have intelligence failures in the first place. When you think the CIA's failure of 9/11, they thought it was unthinkable that Al-Qaeda would attack in the United States. They expected attacks on U.S. facilities overseas. But there was increased evidence coming in, but they never changed their outlook. That's why I've always considered 9/11 not only an intelligence failure, but what the real tragedy is, it could have been prevented. So I don't know how we prevent this kind of activity that we're observing now, but clearly the president of the United States is out of control. We're told that the CIA director may be next for removal. The FBI director, Chris Wray, could also follow. He's flailing around in the White House. He hasn't spoken publicly since the election. He made that one appearance on Veterans Day, but he didn't give a public talk. And yesterday, if you look at his tweets, it was all about Fox News, how Fox News is letting him down. Again, he's looking for those who are responsibility for his failure, for his defeat. And that's why I say he's holding the whole nation up for his revengeful attacks right now. And he has no one around him to calm him down or to give good advice. It's not like there's a chief of staff like a David Gergen or a Leon Panetta in their day who would provide some meaningful counsel to a very distraught, obviously distraught, president of the United States. These next 2 months are going to be a mess.
Before I let you go, you mentioned a moment ago, you said you don't know how we prevent this. I mean, if we can't count on the services, on the military to resist the president's unlawful authority, if we can't count on the intelligence agencies to resist unlawful authority, what weapons do citizens have?
Well, I think the best weapon is really participation. It's maybe getting out on the streets. Maybe this counter protest that's going to take place over the weekend is important. If it gets out of hand, that could be dangerous. But calling congressmen, calling representatives, writing letters, showing that you have total disgust for the unacceptability of what is taking place thus far. I mean, it needs more attention. Attention must be paid, really, to what is going on now. And these superficial explanations, I don't think does anyone any good, because it trivializes what we're seeing. And what we're seeing is quite significant.
Mel Goodman, thank you for coming on WMNF. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Rob. Good to be with you.
Mr. President, there's a military plot to take over the government. This may occur sometime this coming Sunday.
There are some who will say it can never happen here. But this is the story of how it could happen in 7 days of intrigue, of blackmail, of terror, an eternity of suspense. This is the astounding story of a military plot to overthrow the government of the United States, which, if successful, would change the fate of every American.
Well, that's part of the trailer for the film, 1964 film, 7 Days in May. And we've been speaking with Mel Goodman, who's a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy. He teaches at Johns Hopkins University. And for 24 years, he was a CIA analyst. He's written a new column for the website Counterpunch, in which he says, once again, I'm not predicting or anticipating a coup in this country, but I am concerned that a narcissistic president is taking revenge against his own government for failing him. He said, if I were still an intelligence analyst at the CIA and watching events in a third world democracy that resembled the goings on taking place in the U.S., I would be deeply concerned, he says. Well, let's open up the phone lines. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. I asked Mel about tomorrow's protest in Washington, D.C. I'll just read part of an article about what's going to happen tomorrow. White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany said yesterday that she expects the turnout at tomorrow's Million MAGA March in support of President Trump to be quite large. The event is set to take place in Washington, D.C. tomorrow, 1 week after news networks projected that Trump had lost the presidential election to Democrat Joe Biden. Trump has refused to concede the race, and the events tomorrow seem intended to bolster him. Disparate groups are reportedly preparing for the event, with one gathering scheduled to take place at the Freedom Plaza in downtown Washington at 12 noon, with a march to the U.S. Supreme Court at 2. A counter-protest called F-MAGA has also been planned by All Out D.C. to happen nearby. The right-wing groups involved tomorrow include the Stop the Steal D.C., the Proud Boys, and the Oath Keepers, according to a report by DCist. Politico reported that groups such as Women for America First, the Right Side Broadcasting Network, and InfoWars are among those promoting or organizing events. It also reported that a prominent white nationalist who leads the Groyper Army Group is setting up rallies in swing states and in Washington, D.C. tomorrow. The promise of large crowds at rallies by these groups have sometimes fizzled out. Some groups, though, are saying that hundreds of thousands of people could show up tomorrow in Washington, D.C. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Frank Knox, I think, is one of our phone producers today. I think Cindy Philpott is also answering phones. Let's take some calls from listeners and see what's on your mind. There's a lot of other news going on that I want to tell you about. But let's go to Sharon in St. Pete, who's been holding for a while. Hi, Sharon. You're on M&F. What's up?
Hey, Rob. Good morning. I need to talk to you about the fact that I have called my Marco Rubio and Senator Scott, and they do not respond to me. I have called them for 3 days, and they do not respond. And I think that is a bad situation. I mean,
and sure, what happens when you call them? And what are you calling them about?
I have to leave a message.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speak to anyone. No one answers the phone. There's no one that says, you know, can I take a message for you?
And you
can
just
I
want
your... what your problem is.
You want your concern acknowledged. And what's your concern?
My concern is that the president is going to have a coup. And we are, you know, we are screwed. Man, he has gotten around. He has gotten everything he wanted every minute. And I can't let it happen, and I'll die on the streets. I will. This is ridiculous. I mean, this president is an imbecile and an idiot.
Okay. All right. Well, Sharon, thanks. I think we understand where you're coming from. Thank you very much for your phone call. And our phone number is 813-239-9663. Let's go to Nettie in Tampa. Nettie, thank you for calling. What would you like to comment about so far?
Hello, Rob. I wanted to know, and you do get a lot of interesting guest speakers, but they seem to be inside the beltway, as they used to say. They don't use that term very much anymore. Could you get some local people like the mayor? The mayor's like, and then the chief sheriff, some local people, so we can analyze their behavior. I believe we're weaponizing our city, but nobody knows that.
What do you mean, weaponizing our city?
Getting old military equipment.
Oh, yeah, buying military equipment. You know, those topics have come up frequently. I've had the mayor, I've had the sheriff of Hillsborough County on.
Yeah.
I've had the mayors of of St. Petersburg and Tampa and... I try to vary it. I try to, you know, go around, especially, you know, when there's a hot topic. I think the hot topic right now is President Trump is refusing to concede. And what are the implications of that? And why all the big changes at the Pentagon and other places? If I were to bring the mayor on, I think there are some issues that people are concerned about, but the mayor's, is very concerned about COVID. She was concerned about the hurricane, but I'm not sure that COVID and the hurricane measure as high on listeners' concerns as the president's intransigence.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of how she might come on, but she doesn't take any questions. I listen to WNYC, another PBS station, and on Fridays, they have like a half hour with the mayor of New York City. And then they get...
Well, de Blasio is a big fan of public broadcasting. Yeah, okay. Nettie, here's the thing. I will try to do that. We only have a limited amount of talk here. NYC is all talk all the time. It's really great. I love the station, but we'll try to do that, Nettie. I hope, Nettie, you'll listen on Monday. I'll have some local and Florida people on this hour on Monday, and Sean will have some local and Florida people on his show on Monday. And shall we bring the mayors on? Well, we've got the mayor of St. Pete, the mayor of Bradenton, the mayor of Sarasota, the head of the city commission, who's the mayor in Lakeland. There's a lot of mayors that we could bring on. But Nettie, thanks. Thanks for the suggestion. Let's go to John in Wesley Chapel. Hey, John, you're on M&F. What's up?
Hi, Rob. Yeah, I was listening to your guest, and he was very, very interesting and very informative. And there was another author that I had seen on TV in the last few days, and I don't know if you're aware of it or you talked about it earlier, but just following up on everything your guest this morning was talking about, this author who has a new book out, and I forget his name and the name of the book, but one of the things that caught my ear was he said, with Trump getting rid of all of these people like Secretary of Defense and so forth, but he says what he thinks he's doing, excuse me, is replacing these people with political appointees, which, you know, normally historically just go out with the administration, right? But this author says he thinks he's gonna put political appointees into civil service positions, so they can't be, you know.
They can't be removed, that they'll be there permanently.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard this or not. But
yeah, there was a good article, and I forgot where I saw it a few weeks ago. But yes, that article came out about 3 or 4 weeks ago, that President Trump is putting people in some of those positions, and they may be there, you know, as his worms, so to speak, for the future.
Yeah, well, and it's funny. I mean, I'll let you go, but it's kind of ironic because for years he's been talking about the deep state, but this author was saying, you know, he'd like to get these guys in there, so even if he leaves, he'll have a deep state in place for when him or his son or whoever comes back, you know?
All right, John, thanks a lot. I'll try to find the name of that author. John, thanks a lot. Great to hear from you. Ahmed from True Talk is on the phone. Must be important. You're calling back. You were just on the air, Mr. Badir.
Yeah. Well, you're continuing to talk about the same topic that I was speaking about. I actually mentioned about this last Friday. I wouldn't necessarily call it a coup, because when people think of coups, they think that somebody's already in power and they overthrow him from power. Now, Biden hasn't actually, you know, taken the seat. He hasn't been sworn in. He's not in power. His administration's not in power. Trump, his game plan is to do this using the Constitution. Unfortunately, our Constitution, especially when it comes to Article 2 and selecting the president, is so archaic, so old, that it has these loopholes that can be manipulated, and Trump is using those loopholes, like state legislators putting forth the alternate or competing slates of electors in Pennsylvania and Georgia and some of these other states, where he's trying to raise, you know, unfounded doubts about the integrity of the election, and to put forth these other electorates that would be competing. So when they go to Congress in these joint sessions, when they open it up, then they have two different slates, and then it makes it a contested election, and then it goes to a House for a vote. This is all constitutional, and it's not technically against the law, but obviously it's against democratic norms, and it's really not that much. I mean, it is different, but it's similar to what happened in 2016. He lost the popular vote, but was still, seated as president because of the Electoral College. The problem that I see is the democratic leadership and the establishment, even Biden, his campaign, they're not taking this seriously enough. Even the media, you know, for the past, 10 days hasn't taken this issue seriously enough. And, you know, I leave with this point. Our form of, constitutional republic here hinges on the losing presidential candidate to concede the election. If they don't concede, it creates all types of problems. There is no supervisor of election for the nation. There is no elections or canvassing board that's nationwide. There's no impartial, referee or umpire that basically says who won or who lost. So if it goes to a House, U.S. House, for a vote where every state delegation counts as one vote, Trump has the advantage.
Yeah,
the
well, that's a good point. I'm going to read. I heard you talk about it on your show, and thanks for calling in. Let me read from the Huffington Post, who are quoting from the Wall Street Journal on the very topic that you raise, Ahmed. Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
President Trump's legal team is reportedly considering a radical and last-ditch strategy aimed at overturning President-elect Joe Biden's victory in the Electoral College as part of their efforts seeking to overturn the 2020 presidential election. According to reports in the Wall Street Journal, the far-fetched plan involves positioning Republican-controlled state legislatures in states Biden won, like Pennsylvania, Arizona, and Georgia, to ignore their voters and appoint pro-Trump electors who would then swing the Electoral College in Trump's favor and install him in office for another 4 years. This is the so-called Hail Mary option. It's been dismissed by legal experts in both parties as undemocratic and deeply dangerous, one that would directly subvert the will of the people. The move is viewed as an extreme long shot that would be subject to litigation and likely go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. The bigger fear, however, is that even if it is unsuccessful, it would falsely propagate the notion among millions of Trump supporters that the election was unfairly conducted and that Biden is illegitimate as president. Trump's allies, like Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, conservative radio host Mark Levin, and Donald Trump Jr., have continued to push for it, urging the president not to give up fighting the 2020 election result. So you can see that article both in the Wall Street Journal and on Huffington Post. And thank you for raising it, Ahmed. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Jack writes this: what we are witnessing is a manufactured controversy without any evidence, a willingness to accept witnesses without question. This is being done by a man who cannot give up power. For his followers to accept this is beyond my comprehension, writes Jack. And Jeff writes this: if Trump's legal efforts fail and it's found that he did lose the election, I think it might be more logical to try to work out some kind of deal just to get him out of office. I say this because he comes across as mentally unstable, and I fear him possibly doing something dangerously destructive while he's still in the Oval Office. Let's go back to the phones and see what more of our listeners think. The great thing about this show is you hear from so many people. Around the Tampa Bay area, we serve Sarasota, Manatee County, and Pasco, and Pinellas County, and Hillsborough County, and Polk, and we get to surrounding counties like Citrus and Hernando and Hardy. So if you're out there and your voice has not been heard yet, call us up at 813-239-9663. And let's go to Rob in Thanota, Sassa. Rob, thanks for calling in. What would you like to comment about today?
Hey, Rob. Yeah, I still think that our institutions will hold up and, you know, that the military, well, the Joint Chief, the head of the Joint Chiefs, right, he gave that address at a military college, I believe, and it was a very pointed admonition that, you know, we're all military people, uniformed people are supposed to follow their oath to defend the Constitution and not to defend an individual. So I thought that was sort of a shot across the bow, so to speak. And also, I'm curious, because I've read Chris Hedges' book on the Dominionists, and there is a cadre of those people, as we talked about, within the military, and I'm wondering whether these people Trump is installing are of that ilk.
Yeah, so. I don't know if the reporters have gotten that far into their background yet. All these appointments are pretty new, but that's right. A good question. You know, Chris Hedges, I think, is going to be on the station this coming Tuesday at 10 o'clock. I think that's the plan.
Oh, that's
so
great.
Yeah, so we'll have Chris Hedges on. Rob, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you, and this is 88.5 FM. If you want to chime in, call us. We got an open line, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Joe in St. Pete. Hi, Joe. You're on M&F.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. You know, I just called Marco Rubio's office, and I left him quite a nasty message. We don't send these people to Washington to represent President Trump. We send them up there to represent us. If we vote for a certain candidate and he wins the election, it's up to them to support the majority of the people. We are the majority. Even if let's say even if we were a minority, they're still supposed to be representing us. And this is not happening in this country. It bothers me a lot that that I hear on the news every day that the senators are afraid of Trump. They're so afraid of him. What are they afraid of? They're the ones that have the power. They have the power to overthrow him at any time. So I just don't understand.
Yeah, they swear to an oath to defend the Constitution. They don't. They're not there to defend a president or a party or anything like that. So, Joe, thanks a lot. Why they're afraid, I don't know. I'm going to talk about.
I'm not afraid.
Okay, I'm going to talk about that tonight on my television program too. I'm going to ask a Republican why. So many Republicans are afraid of President Trump. Let's go to Danny in Tampa. Danny, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, good morning, Rob. I haven't talked to you since the election. I'm not surprised. I think a lot of people are not surprised that this madman would go around and do this. You know, the whole thing is that he is, like John Brennan said now, he says there's time maybe to think about the 25th Amendment, because John Brennan said this is like the caller just like you just said, that he could be so, and Mary Trump said that he will do anything, including a venture abroad militarily or whatever. He could still do a lot of damage, and this is one of the big reasons we have to watch this guy. Listen, Rob, he won 50.8%. He's on his way to 8 million more votes than winning by 8 million votes. The biggest is 1932. When FDR beat Hoover, and as far as you know, the Electoral College, where you soundly beat him, you know these people, you know they told us 4 years ago the people who voted for Hillary suck it up. It's time to suck it up, you guys. This guy lost. He lost, and it's simple as that.
And Danny, before you go, did you win any bets last Tuesday?
Yes, I won $100 from I don't know if you heard the show Tuesday from Simon. But
has so Simon paid? Danny?
No.
Okay.
Simon told Mark that Danny will have to wait.
Okay.
Because he'll have to wait till it's certified.
All right.
Until the last out is out. The last out, like in a game. And I was the next caller. I said, okay, Simon, I'll wait. But I did talk to Mark earlier. Mark said he's going to review the situation when it comes in. You know, Simon knows that it's over. He just wants to, you know, that's fine. Yeah, I trust him. But I tell you what, I talked to Mark this morning, and I asked him, have you heard from Chuck? And he says, no.
Yeah.
And he
says, right.
He hasn't even called the station.
All right, Danny, thanks a lot. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, great to hear from you. And let's go to Greg in Tampa. Greg, thanks for calling. What's on your mind today?
Good morning. I just wanted to say happy belated Veterans Day. I get to wish that out to everyone and remind everybody that as military, you're sworn to uphold the Constitution of the United States and not to a leader. It's a dangerous, you know, precedent to go there. And I am just looking for this thing to be over with. But at what point do people like Hannity get called out for promoting insurrection? You know, it's quiet right now, and I'm just, you know, I hope that sensibility will prevail. He needs more calming voices in the Republican Party, and I'm just looking forward to peaceful transition. Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, I think we all are. Greg, thank you. Thank you for that. We needed those words, and let's go to Don in Polk City. Hi, Don. You're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Hi. First time I've called. These people are talking about how Trump supporters can be so far out of it. I just left the supply house and listened to a guy for 5 minutes talking to somebody else about all these fake votes and all these texts that Trump's putting out about him, and he couldn't put those texts out if they weren't true. You'd think after 4 years he'd figured this out.
that sometimes the president texts things that are not true.
Imagine that.
Yeah. Okay, Don, thanks a lot. Thanks.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you were calm while listening to this person, too.
Actually, no. I called as soon as I walked out of the place.
Okay. All right, Don. Thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. Let's go to Sherman in Sarasota. Hi, Sherman. You're on 88.5 FM.
Hey, good morning. You know, I think... To me, this is a quick comment. To me, this is a time for people who really love this country to prepare for battle And the reason is not that I really want to do that, but I think there's four things we know for sure. Number one, the Republican Party has basically created an environment that gave rise to somebody like Donald Trump over the last 20 or 30 years by using demonization, vilification, and lies as a political strategy. Number two, even if Trump himself leaves the scene, there's going to be a line of people that are going to cater to the same, try to inflame the same stuff to kind of use the power that it generates. And number three, they're going to find supporters in foreign countries that have an interest in destroying our democracy. So I don't see any of those three things disappearing. So to me, I'm hopeful that the system holds, and it appears to be, but I think there are some rather large forces that have been unleashed, and I don't think this is going to go away.
Well, Sherman, I'm sure people that are President Trump supporters, when they hear you use the word battle, are going to say, well, there's somebody who's an opponent of President Trump, and he wants to fight us. And what do you mean when you say battle?
I mean a battle for the principles. I'm not talking about a physical battle. I mean, I'm hoping it's just a political battle. But, you know, do you have any doubt? Is there any doubt in your mind that if President Trump could mobilize the military to go into cities and to basically stop vote counting and to effectively declare martial law and to, like, basically withhold power, you think he'd hesitate for a second to do that?
Yeah, I think that was a concern raised by our guest, too, because it's not just the head of the Pentagon, but it's several positions under the defense secretary, too, that have been replaced by Trump. So President Trump is doing something. We don't know why, but he is taking more personal control over the Pentagon. And that is a concern that many people have, yeah.
I mean, the bottom line is Trump is basically, to me, I mean, he's not really the problem. I mean, Trump is effectively he's a hardwired, kind of creature that is completely predictable and reacts in entirely predictable ways, vicious, malicious ways, but you know how he's going to behave. But to me, there is no question this guy would break the law, would seize power, would mobilize physical force to retain power if he could get people to follow him. No question at all.
Yeah, and I think that's why a lot of people are trying to call their U.S. senators and members of Congress and object to say, look, we live in a democracy, we have a constitutional process, follow it, and the president is not going to make up all those votes, 55,000 votes in Pennsylvania. It's just not going to happen, even if you recount everything. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Dave in Tampa. Dave, thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, good morning, Rob. You know, the French, after World War II, tracked down the Vichy, which were the collaborators with the Nazis, and some of the women who had relations with Nazis, they had their heads shaved, and some of them were executed. I think what we've got here, this is not politics, this is subversion, and I think we ought to look at it somewhat in a similar way. In the end, democracy is going to prevail, but I think we all...
Yeah, but Dave, again, Trump supporters are going to say, look, you know, if you guys on the left, like I assume you are, Dave, are going to come and shave somebody's head because they supported President Trump, they're going to say, wow, that's outrageous, and I'm going to fight that.
I'm not suggesting we shave...
Well, why did you bring it up then?
Because I think we need to have the mentality that we need to mark these people like Ron DeSantis, Lindsey Graham, the people who are enabling Trump. We need to mark them mentally, psychologically, and politically as...
Okay, so you're not going to shave their heads, though. You're not going to shave their heads.
No, absolutely.
Okay. I just wondered why you brought it up, because I think that those are fighting words to people on the other side who are listening.
They are. Yeah. And that's exactly what I'm saying, is we ought to have a fighting mentality. We're fighting for our democracy. This isn't politics. These people are subverting our institutions. They're trying to convert this to an authoritarian state. And that is subversion. And I think we really ought to have a battle mentality, but not really take it into the streets with violence. But politically, these people ought to be marked as permanently unacceptable.
All right, Dave.
We ought to be, on a political basis, we ought to be driving that.
All
that
right.
Message.
Dave, thanks a lot. Thank you. I understand there's a really good series out there. I think it's called French Town or French Village, and it's about the aftermath of World War II in a small French village, and it deals with that question of collaborators. People tell me it's really a great series. I haven't seen it yet. Let's go to Mike in Brandon. Mike, you're on M&F. Thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob. How are you?
I'm terrific. What's going on?
Yeah, 150 out of 250 I've collected so far.
You won your bet for winning on the presidency?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So far, so good. The other gentleman, he'll send $100 from Texas once it's all completely certified, whatnot.
Okay, well, I'm glad some people are winning money. That's good.
Well, it's sad that we even have to do that in the first place. But here's the thing. You know, unfortunately, I injured myself, and I kind of laid myself up, you know, back injuries and all that good stuff. And I was watching on PBS yesterday a very interesting story of the rise of Adolf Hitler during the early 30s. And it struck me some of the parallels where people that were in, you know, powerful people that were in the German government thought they were absolutely sure that they could control him. And before they knew it, he successfully circumnavigated and took over the government. And I think that when Trump ran, because he's a symbol, I see him as a symbol. And that's why I think he has the cult, you know, the cult of personality. People see what they want to see in him. He's more than just a person, per se, Donald Trump. He's a symbol, whatever they invoke in him. But they thought that they could control him also. Right now, with him systematically doing things in the government, especially when it comes to our security and intelligence, it leads me to believe that I think he's data mining to get as much information as he can and use that possibly, excuse the pun, a Trump card as far as being prosecuted once he's out of office. Because he knows he and his family, close associates, are all in legal jeopardy. They know that.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, Mike, thanks a lot. Thank you for making the point. All right. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Yesterday, I don't know if you heard the show, but yesterday I had a historian on named Ruth Ben-Ghiat, and she wrote a new book called Strongmen. And to Mike's point is that all the strongmen, like Franco and Hitler and Mussolini, when they first came to power or as they approached power, were all underestimated. And it turns out that they became pretty ruthless once they grabbed the reins of power. And there's something about grabbing the reins of power that makes people ruthless. And that was one of the points of her book yesterday. And you can hear that interview on our website, on our archives. Well, let's take a few more phone calls. Let's go to Neil in St. Pete. Hi, Neil. You're on M&F. What's up?
I'd like to, on an optimistic note.
Okay.
I think since Trump is a unique person, he has, you know, the TV show, all the years of getting his con man skills well-polished in New York, and I don't see anyone on the horizon who could come and rally his people except for someone like him. I just don't see anybody out there. You know, they may try to be like Trump light, but I just don't see them having the same charismatic draw. So I think we'll be in good shape. This will all pass.
Okay, Neil, thanks a lot. Thank you for your views. All right, you too. Great to hear from you. Let's go to Jay in St. Pete. Jay, thanks for calling. What's up? Did I turn on the right one? I'm probably turned on the wrong one. This is not Jay. This is somebody else. Caller, what's your name?
My name is Joel Hu.
Hi, Joel. Thanks for calling. What would you like to say?
Oh, I'm on the air already?
Yeah, I hit the wrong button.
Well, lucky Joel. Thanks.
You are lucky. Buy a lottery ticket.
I just tuned in. I've talked a few times to you before. I think in just the last 5 minutes, my perception through history is what people are focusing on is it's not suddenly somebody is going to grab for power. That's been the whole goal all along. And that's what people forget is that these intrinsic things, it's part of our species, actually. These intrinsic things are all about being ruthless.
All right, Joel, thanks a lot. We're out of time. I wish we had more time. But I'll tell you what, if you're on hold, stick around, because I'm sure that Janelle is going to talk about the elections. So if you want to comment about the elections, keep on hold. Janelle is coming up on the Midpoint program. And thanks to Cindy Philpott and Frank Knox, our phone producers today. I'm Rob Lori. Have a great weekend. If you want to comment about this show, call us at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. This is